It is 7:58 and 13, 14 seconds, 15 seconds, 16 seconds, 17 seconds. Good evening. This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing in the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that will determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers. And, of course, we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls because we're going to have a fascinating hour here. Our guest this evening is Carol Matriciana, and we're going to be talking about her latest film that goes into Hollywood and what's really going on. Who is it who controls the media? Why are there powerful dark forces that wanted to keep Mel Gibson's film The Passion from being shown? And really, Carol's done a wonderful job on her this latest of her videos. Carol, thank you so much for being with us.
Dr. Stan, good evening, and thank you for allowing me to be a guest with you. I just love being with you. You are a fascinating talk show host.
Well, thank you so much. Well, you flatter me like that, I'll have you on all the time. Anyway, because we like to have Carol on as a regular basis. And but the latest video, in fact, my wife watched it the other evening for the second time. I watched it all the way through the first time, and but she came in a little late, so she went down and watched it again the second night. It was so good. And this really deals with Hollywood. What's the title of the video?
It's called Gods of Entertainment: The Power of Mass Media to Influence and Corrupt.
And, of course, you start out the video by talking about what most people don't really realize, and that is that there are five major corporations that control about, or almost, 95% of everything the American people hear, see, and ultimately what they believe. The media, the entertainment, it's all pretty well controlled by five major corporations. What are those major corporations?
Well, yes, it is. It's basically five U.S. companies, although there are two other worldwide, but it was the five U.S. mega media conglomerates that is AOL, They amalgamated with Time Warner in 2001 in a $165 billion mega merger, forming the largest media business in history. And then Viacom is the next largest media multinational. And then Walt Disney comes in third with revenues that topped $27 billion last year, and its worldwide assets amount to almost $50 billion. The incredible fourth one, of course, is the one that I find the most incredible, because it's the one that controls the news across the universe almost, and that's Rupert Murdoch's News Corporation, Inc., which is the powerful provider of news worldwide and has media holdings in not only America, but Canada, Europe, Australia, Latin America, and Asia. And then the fifth mega media conglomerate is Vivendi Universal, and their subsidiary Universal Music Group is the world's number one production and distribution of music, and they boast the sale of one in every four albums worldwide. So that is a very impressive group of media conglomerates with worth multiple billions of dollars. And they control the world's largest entertainment, theme parks, major motion pictures, studios, television, radio broadcast networks, all the TV programming, video news, sports entertainment, integrated telecommunications, including phone and wireless devices and computer software. Oh my gosh, interactive video games, electronic media, the internet, print news. It's incredible. And then, of course, the music industry.
And I really think what's so incredible is that the five major corporations have such a definite control over what we think, hear, and see. And you see, of course, everything is progressively, a little at a time, becoming more depraved, more of an emphasis on sex and depravity, and really playing games with the minds of our young people. This is really what's so frightening. And, of course, the major audience that Hollywood has is the 14-year-olds. I thought you brought that out so well. In fact, so many of the motion pictures are aimed at the mind of the 14-year-olds, and they're certainly not giving them overall a very healthy message, are they?
No. One of the things that amazed me in the research of Gods of Entertainment was the way that the big five battle daily for the ready cash of our 32 million American teenagers who have the potential to spend $150 billion a year. And for this financial prize, these corporations seduce, entice, deceive the largest ever generation of teens. They're the most marketed to group of young adults in the history of the world. And some of my research took me into some incredible statistics that these young kids receive up to 3,000 discrete advertising messages a day, and 10 million by the time they reach 18 years of age.
And, of course, this would be on the Internet, this would be on the television, this would be on radio, but constantly besieged. And, of course, these messages are firmly implanted in their subconscious, as well as, of course, all the messages about depravity and sex and drugs and all the things that are wrong, that is moving our society away from its Christian foundation, really towards into a pagan society.
Absolutely. I mean, one of the things, of course, that is so easy to see that paganism has gone mainstream and means mainstream, you know, it's paganization. Mainstream has been paganized. I mean, that's the way it goes. We see that the programming, not only on television but in movies, is leaning more and more towards indoctrination of, or I should say the glamorization of witchcraft, paganization of, the whole political movement, the homosexual movement, everything is leaning against an biblical Judeo-Christian foundation. And to pagan roots that lift up the women in the fertility, the female fertility rites, which of course focus on witchcraft and mother goddess worship, the environmental movement that focuses on nature worship that has now been politically endorsed in a sense through the environmental movement. So we have nature worship, mother goddess worship, environment worship, female worship. I mean, it's just, it goes on and on. And our kids are getting bombarded with sex outside of marriage, the teaching of condoms and homosexuality. And it goes on and on. But our mass media continually works on it. It's not only coming through the industry, it's not only coming through Hollywood and motion pictures, but through TV programming, through video games, through the internet, through even our news has become entertainment.
Now, I think one of the interesting things, the motion picture has a number of very provocative interviews with various people. One of them is my good friend Ted Baer of Movie Guide. And of course, he comments on really the impact of these movies. He also goes into the fact that many of these movies that are the most vile and depraved don't make much money. In fact, they make much less money than the good wholesome movies. And there are some wholesome movies that come out of Hollywood. In fact, there seem to be more of them because the depraved ones are not making much money. Would you like to sort of develop that idea?
Yes, I found it very, very interesting. Ted Baer, as you say, is not only the president of the Movie Guide, but he is also the head of the Christian television Christian Film and Television Commission, that's what I was trying to think of. And according to a study by them, they found out that American audiences want movies with a strong moral message, and box office averages support that. And that in 2003, the films that were rated G and PG consistently earned two or three times more money on average than R-rated movies. And it showed that movies that contained very strong moral content earned six times more money than movies with immoral and negative content or strong pagan content or homosexuality or occultism. So the issue here isn't, I mean, many people think that money is Hollywood's focus, but really these polls indicate that there's another agenda. And I think that was one of the things that I wanted to focus in this video, Gods of Entertainment, to show that there is an anti-Judeo-Christian bias in the major major Hollywood studios.
And I thought one of the points that you made so well, you had a gentleman there who had worked with Mel Gibson, who has been in Hollywood for a long time, and would you like to talk a little bit about what he said? Because I thought that was one of the key points of the video, as he talks about the fact that money is not the major goal of many of the people in Hollywood. So pick up that story.
Yes, that was David Manasian, who is the director who was involved in the making of the film Behind the Passion, the documentary of the making of the Passion. And the question I asked him is, does the media reflect society or contribute to the decline of the values? And he brought out the point that really that media, that Hollywood movies possibly contributed to the decline, and particularly that they have this agenda that is such an anti-Judeo-Christian agenda. And he told the story that Mel Gibson, and having worked so closely with Mel, that Mel put his own money into the movie, of course, The Passion of the Christ, because when he approached Hollywood, and what one needs to understand is the power of Mel Gibson. He is the second most powerful man in Hollywood after Steven Spielberg. This is an award-winning director and actor. He has brought in the industry hundreds of thousands, billions of dollars. So he is measured by his worth, and yet they declined to back him on this film, The Making of the Passion of the Christ. And as the director of the movie mentioned, that had Mel perhaps not stayed so close to scripture, had he perhaps portrayed Christ as a sexual deviant or homosexual, as we saw in The Last Temptation of Christ, then, you know, perhaps they'd gone, they would have invested in it, but they didn't because Mel wanted to stay true to the gospel record of the last 12 hours of the Passion of the Christ. And even when he had put in his personal finances and then wanted Hollywood to distribute the film, and I think many people don't realize that the distribution network, all the theaters outside of Hollywood are part of the Hollywood network of distribution, and that the industry owns the theaters that promote the product that the industry makes, and so they put out their the product that they endorse goes through their distribution network, all the theaters that show the movies, and they would not support Mel Gibson. They would not allow the distribution of The Passion to come through the Hollywood network. So Mel had to work with the churches, and the churches got behind it. So I think that what was absolutely terrific was that Mel Gibson's unprecedented success overwhelmingly expresses the spiritual heart of the majority of Americans. And yet, you know, Hollywood decided adamantly they refused to invest in the making of the film. They refused to support the distribution. But strong churches and Christians pursued supporting this film, and you know, the battle of good won out, and Mel Gibson's film got into the theaters and was an incredible success. But because the churches and Christians around the country went behind the movie.
And, you know, I think, Carol, what this really demonstrates is that the people of this country are basically good. They haven't destroyed the goodness, the warmth, the Christian dedication of the majority of the people in this country. But the Hollywood and the people who control our entertainment and the mass media have an entirely different agenda. It is an anti-Christian agenda. In fact, they hate Christianity and everything it stands for, and there really is evil in the world today. And people must understand that, and these people have the great wealth and tremendous, tremendous power. But, of course, they have the only power as long as we allow them to have it, because goodness is on our side, and what we need is an organized effort to get out these wonderful films that are coming out. Apparently, there are about 9 Christian-based films that are in the process of being made or just about ready to be released, and we need to emphasize seeing them and encourage Christians to go to see them and support the people who have done that. There was a beautiful film last a year on John, and another one on Martin Luther, and of course they got very, very little play. And if nobody talks about a film, you don't even know it's there, and you're certainly not going to see it pushed by the controlled media. Fortunately, Mel was able to circumvent the media blackout, and with the attacks from the ADL, Abe Foxman of the ADL kept yelling and screaming and foaming at the mouth, talking about it. In fact, I suggested maybe he was working as a shill for Mel Gibson because he gave him more publicity. He did more to get that film seen by Christians than any other single individual, and I say that with tongue in cheek because I'm sure he was really very sincere. He didn't like the film at all. But it wasn't because it was anti-Jewish in any manner or means. It was because it was true to the scriptures, and there are people who hate Christianity, and I believe, tragically, I think he's terribly, terribly misguided. But, you know, one of the things that really intrigued me, you have a number of clips in there on Mel Gibson's film, The Making of the Christ, and then you have that wonderful interview between Mel Gibson and Diane Sawyer, where Mel is talking about these dark forces that are intent upon blocking him. And he's really talking about spiritual forces. He's not talking about people like Abe Foxman and others. He's talking about spiritual forces. And Diane Sawyer asks him, well, what do these forces really want? And Mel's answer is worth the entire price of the video. I thought that was just a classic response and shows that Mel really has a grasp of what this is all about, far better than many of the people that, you know, that would be going to a Protestant church.
Well, I think so. I mean, Mel, through the making of this film and the director that I interviewed in Gods of Entertainment, this video that shows the power of mass media to influence and corrupt, the director, David Manassian, said that it was so incredible to watch Mel Gibson grow spiritually in the making of the movie. I mean, he did a lot of research. He went to theologians. He went to the scriptures. He was very involved in personally wanting to be true and accurate to the scriptures, that he was even growing in his faith with the making of the film. And as his enemies came against him, and as the Hollywood media came against him, saying what a stupid idea it was to do the film in Aramaic, and that they would not support it because it was in Aramaic, Mel actually put in a scene in the movie after the movie was made that the Lord impressed on him, was the scene where Jesus stands at the Mount of Beatitudes and says that when your enemies come against you, you know, that turn the other cheek. And Mel actually put that in because he realized that that is something that he wanted to learn to be able to do, that as his enemies were going against him, that he was learning about supernatural powers and the power between good and evil. And he realized that it was a spiritual battle. And by the time that Diane Sawyer asked him, you know, what is this spiritual force after? Mel just looked at her and was able to say, you and me. I mean, this is what the big battle is about out there, that, you know, the enemy is after all of us.
And it really is. And he brought out so beautifully that there really is evil. There really is evil that would claim the hearts and souls of men. Let me recommend this video to you, The Gods of Entertainment. Of course, it's available through our ministry at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war today. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest this evening is Carol Matriciadam, and Carol has put together a number of wonderful videos, and we're going to talk about some of these when all of our listeners from our network across America has joined us again. But right now, of course, they're not. Some of them are listening to other things, and so we'll be back in just a moment or two. But Carol, you know, as you put this together, of course, you had Jane Chastain. Would you tell our listeners just a little bit about Jane and who she is and why her testimony is so important?
Well, I wanted Jane to come in and interview her because I think so many people don't understand that news in itself has become entertainment. And Jane, she is a news commentator, a wonderful political analyst, a journalistic reporter in WorldNet Daily, an alternative e-news newspaper, wonderful alternatives that if people get fed up of biased news reporting on television, then there are really good alternatives like yourself and Dr. Ted Baer with Movie Guide and WorldNet Daily and Newsmax. All of these give really good conservative news coverage, and Jane is a real wonderful spokesperson out there. And she was able to tell us how the news media works. And she, of course, was the first woman in the 60s to, the first woman sports commentator to go into a male world, the male locker room, and interview the jocks on the football in the locker room there, and created such havoc. But she's a wonderful, punky, spirited little 5'3" shrimp that is just so courageous. And she was able to let us know that ratings are so important, and that the news is competing for rating, and that's why they become more and more entertaining and want to be able to bring entertainment into the news. And they don't care about the important issues that are going on in Congress and Senate and in the political arena half as much as they should be. And and of course, that's her particular area of expertise. But she let us know that, you know, kids can today see shootings in the news right there in real life. That no one, they come out of their video games and out of movies where they see graphic special effects putting death and killing so close to us, but then you go to the news and you can actually see the real thing taking place right there, and we've just become desensitized to crime and criminology and death, and of course Dr. Baer also tells the same thing so wonderfully well, that there are these copycat crimes and copycat murders that take place with kids watching the movies. And then he brought out some really good examples of how judges see that murders done by kids oftentimes follow actual murders that they've seen in movies.
And of course, this is what people don't understand, is that everything you see in a motion picture or on the television screen is indelibly imprinted in your mind. You may not even remember it, but it's there. It can be called back. And of course, this determines how children act. In fact, when the head of MGM was asked before Congress, does what people see on television influence them? He said, of course it does. But, of course, they don't want you to know that. We'll be back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here. Our guest this evening is Carol Matriciana. We're talking about her latest video. It's called The Gods of Entertainment. Now, our telephone number, if you'd like to talk to Carol, is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. This is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And Carol has done a number of excellent videos in recent years on Harry Potter, on witchcraft, on the battle between good and evil.
Yep.
And of course, then there's one a little different, but it's one that I think everybody should see. It's called The New Barbarians, and it's really based upon film clips from Arab television. Now, these are things you're never going to see in America. What we see is one side of what's going on over in the Middle East. The Arabs see a different side. And in these videos, you'll actually see how they are training children, and we're talking about kids 6, 8, or 10, to become Islamic warriors. They're training them how noble it is to die for Allah, to blow themselves up, to kill the infidels. And this is a constant program barrage on the minds of the Islamic youth, training them for the coming war against the West. And believe me, when you've seen this video, you'll understand the frightening implications of what lies ahead of us. Remember that 25 years ago, this radical Islamic movement did not exist. It did not exist until America brought the Ayatollah Khomeini to power and brought about the Afghan war against the Soviets and began pushing this radical Islamic belief. But, you know, it's sort of like when you throw a lighted match into a dry forest. When you start that forest fire going, you never know where it's going to end up. But that fire is increasingly raging, and that fire is in the hearts of the Islamic people. And more formerly moderate Muslims are now turning to this radical form of Islam, which calls for spreading Islam by the sword and killing the infidels. But what they're doing with the minds of the youth, that was the most startling video. It's called The New Barbarians, and of course we carry that video as well, but what was your thoughts when you put that together, Carol?
Well, the reason that I put that together is, you know, about 20 years ago when I first started in video journalism, I was working with kids that were being indoctrinated in various cults, and at those days the parents were coming for help. Their children were involved in Hare Krishna or the Children of God or Scientology, and these kids were being swept off the streets of Europe and then sent to different countries where they were being taken away from their parents and then indoctrinated into these cults and put out into an entirely different culture where they just couldn't escape because they didn't know enough about the country or the language that they were taken to become followers of Hare Krishna or the Children of God or Sun Myung Moon or whatever it was, the Unification Church, Scientology. They were. It was a very big movement in the sort of 70s, and I was involved in helping these kids that were being taken out of various different countries and then being taken to, for instance, you know, following the gurus in India with Bhagwan Sri Rajneesh, etc., etc. So when I made the movies Gods of the New Age or on these various different cults, I was watching the indoctrination of people sitting in front of their cult leaders and completely being brainwashed and numbed. But The thing I found so incredible when I made this film, The New Barbarians, Training Children to Kill, was that young children were being indoctrinated through television, through children's programming, through music videos, whatever it was, at a very, very young age, as you mentioned, 2 years old, 4 years old, 6 years old, with Arab television constantly going on day and night, indoctrinating these children to kill Jews and Christians and Americans, and just watching this killing and stoning with cartoons. And so through another Jewish producer, he collected these hundreds and hundreds of hours of footage off Arab television in the Middle East, and very kindly allowed me to go through and select the footage that was relevant to the indoctrination through the media of these children. 10,000 children a year being taught to kill in camps, actually teaching them how to slit throats and load guns and kill infidels.
Well, I think we have to realize there are 1.25 billion Muslims, and they're all being intensely inflamed. Now, this is not happening by accident, it's happening by design, and you need to know, the American people need to know, what you're not being told, and how they're using television in the other countries to create hatred for us, for everything we stand for. And look at what our television represents. The moral depravity, is it any wonder that some of the Muslims look upon us as the great Satan? We'll be back here in just a moment or two with Carol Matriziano. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Carol Matriciana, and we're talking about her videos. We've been talking just briefly about one of her videos, which is The New Barbarians, and we carry that video. We think it's a very, very important one, and of course, I think all of her videos are important, and we do carry all of them because we think it's important. What about those videos you have on Harry Potter? Those, certainly, I what really disturbs me so much, Carol, is I find some Christian ministries saying that they don't see anything wrong with Harry Potter. After all, it's getting the children to read, and it's all just make-believe, it's just myth, and so what's wrong with Harry Potter? After all, don't we want our children reading? Isn't that good?
Well, you see, I think, Dr. Stan, that if people saw that it was the teaching of a religion, they'd be up in arms. I mean, if we had a 7-part series about a little Muslim boy, let's say, called Muhammad, and you know, he was off in boarding school with his 350 other jihad extremists who are willing to die for what they believe in and would stop at absolutely nothing to obtain fulfillment of their dream, and we'd see you know, them being taught how to be involved in radical the radical branch of Islam and how to drive the West from Islamic nations and all this sort of thing, and it was all put into a fun adventure with lots of humor. And in the middle of it, they were being taught how to possess the oil wealth of the Middle East and how to destroy Israel and how to obtain nuclear weapons for mass destruction or whatever. And all that was tied up in a group of 350 Islamic kids going to a boarding school and their teachers teaching them this. I think parents would be up in arms if it was popularized. But because we have a little witch, Harry Potter, and doing exactly the same things. His occult teachers are teaching him how to be involved in witchcraft along with 350 other students, how to completely change their Judeo-Christian worldview to a pagan idea that lying and cheating and stealing is okay, that Harry cheats on term papers, that they do their magic tricks outside of parameters, and their magic powers, they use them outside of parameters, etc. All this is seen as amusing because people don't realize that witchcraft is real, that it's been given, that it is a real religion, it's been given IRS tax-exempt status by the Supreme Court, there are Wicca chaplains in the military, This is an indoctrination program that is going through our schools where the Bible has been thrown out of the classrooms, and yet
Hold that thought right for a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening is Carol Matriciano. We've just been chatting about the Harry Potter books, the Harry Potter movies, and Carol is pointing out that we can use these books on witchcraft in our schools, but we can't talk anything about the Bible. We could not have the Bible in a public school, but it's all right to have books about Harry Potter and witchcraft. And what most people don't understand is that the power of witchcraft is not simply a figment of somebody's imagination. It is not myth. The power of witchcraft is very real. And witches really can conjure up evil spirits because they're tapping into the demonic realm, because there is another realm out there, and they understand that. In fact, I did a nationwide television program on a network called, I think it was the Tech Network. It was on for about 6 minutes, but at least we had an opportunity to reach literally hundreds of thousands of young people, including many witches. And I had this one letter from a witch, and she was furious by my presentation talking about the spiritual battle and Satanism. And she said, "Now, we are not Satanists at all. Why, we're simply people, a form of religion. We're witches, and of course there are a few bad witches, but most of us are white witches, and we're good witches. And really, of course, we try to conjure up our spells so that we can contact beings from another dimension. So we can contact beings from another dimension. And that's what it's really all about. There is another dimension out there. They can contact these beings, but of course at the risk of their very souls." And a lot of people think these things are funny. They're not funny at all. People don't understand that there is a spiritual battle going on, and I know that you're so well aware of that, having been raised in India, where, of course, these dark and demonic spirits are not imaginary, but really very real, aren't they?
Oh, yes. I think that in any of the third or fourth or fifth world countries, they know that the supernatural exists. They're superstitious. They know that there are powers and principalities, and they believe that they can be manipulated to do good, and that their power can be used to heal, and as many, many witches will say, they only use that power for good and for white magic. And I think they truly, truly believe that they have the power to control the supernatural beings to be able to use the power for good. I don't think that they understand that these supernatural powers and beings are much more powerful than us human beings, and that they actually use us human beings in order to ultimately possess us and pursue their own agenda. And I think where Christians get so out of line when they think Harry Potter is okay, or the use of using the good side of magic is okay, why did God warn us so severely? Why does God say to stay away from it? God is very, very aware of the power of evil. I mean, look at this Satan who came to the Garden of Eden when Eve was without sin. She was made in the image and likeness of God, and yet he was able to seduce her. Now, we who have now taken on her sin nature, aren't we much more vulnerable to be seduced?
Well, I think that the very important thing is for people to realize that there really are these supernatural powers. There is this battle between good and evil. And until people recognize this, they can't understand anything going on in the world today. And they don't understand the danger of so many of these motion pictures that deal with witchcraft and demonology and of course the Harry Potter films and books, which have had such a profound impact, and of course they're all based upon the supernatural and Miss Rowling's study of these demonic approaches. She understands witchcraft, and she uses this in all of her books. Certainly Harry Potter may be a mythological individual, but the the spirits he taps into are not mythological. They're really very real. And more of our young people are becoming fascinated with witchcraft. You commented, what, about 5% of the children who read those Harry Potter books are attracted into witchcraft?
A very, very large percent are attracted. And the Pagan Federation of England even gave the credit to the popularization of witchcraft to the Harry Potter books, and they said that even when Buffy the Vampire Slayer and Sabrina the Teenage Witch come on television, their mailbags swell by thousands after these shows of young teenagers asking to learn more about witchcraft and where their local covens are. And they very clearly say that witchcraft is the fastest growing religion amongst teenagers. So here we have the pagans boasting this and giving credit to the magic, the increase in magic through the Harry Potter books, and the kids want that power.
And of course, when we see our Christian leaders in some of their magazines saying, there's nothing wrong with this, it's all myth, you've got nothing to worry about, we want our children to read this sort of thing, why, you wonder what has happened to the Christian leadership of this country. Where are the people who are speaking out against it, and why the silence is deafening?
Well, I think they just don't understand the power of good and evil.
And, of course, until we understand this power of good and evil, we're not going to be able to be effective at all in this truly spiritual battle for the hearts and minds and souls of mankind. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. Or here on the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. If you have a thought on this or you have a question for Carol, she's far more of an expert on this than I am. She's been studying it for many years. Raised in India, where paganism and mysticism and demonic possession were an everyday occurrence, and having even dabbled in this before she came to know the Lord, she's certainly one of the world's leading experts on this, has done such a tremendous job putting out videos on this subject, and now, of course, with her more recent videos, and certainly the Gods of Entertainment, I commend to you her videos on Harry Potter, on witchcraft, and then, of course, this battle between good and evil that we were just talking about, supernatural power, the battle between good and evil. All of these are available through Radio Liberty, and now I know that the supernatural power is available in DVD. Do you have the one on the Gods of Entertainment on DVD yet?
Not yet. Harry Potter is available on DVD, and what I try to do, Dr. Stan, is I try and get some bonus footage and some extra the outs that were taken out of the videos and put them together on the DVD, so that comes a little bit later, a little bit after the video's been released. I go to all the outs and see what we can use and put some bonus footage on the DVD, which we did on the Harry Potter program. There's an additional hour of information off various radio shows that I was involved in, and then in Supernatural Powers, the bonus footage on that is a television show on witchcraft that was an additional, as I say, an additional half an hour, I think, or perhaps that was an hour show. But anyway, I do try and put in bonus footage on them, and talking about the way that children are succumbed or enticed into the evil. I think in that Supernatural Powers video, one of the most shocking interviews I had was with that young boy that got into a gifted reading program and started reading Goosebumps, and then he and his mates got so excited by the horror and the crime and the violence in the Goosebumps series and the fear, and he started having nightmares, and his nightmares and sort of humoring horror turned into eventually him pulling a knife out on his siblings and his mother at the kitchen table. It's a very scary, very, very scary interview of this young man who was just 9 years old when he started reading these Goosebumps, and then pulled out a knife after 1 year of being involved in this, and these powers just got hold of him, and in his nightmares and in his daily activities. Very scary interview.
Well, I think that the people have to understand the tremendous impact that the gods of entertainment have on our youth, and even on us. You know, we like to think that we're immune from this sort of thing. We can see it, and it's not going to impact on us, but remember, every one of those images is indelibly stored in your subconscious, exactly as if you were putting it into a computer, because that's how a computer works, and that's how our mind works. And don't think that this is not going to have an impact on us. Don't think you can watch this sort of thing, with impunity. There are always consequences for everything. Well, of course, let's get back to our discussion of the gods of entertainment, because this is a powerful video. What does it go, about an hour and a half or so?
I think it's about 70 minutes, and I took numerous scientific studies in it, which were very interesting research. And I think one of the things I found so fascinating is that by the time children are 17 years old, they will have spent at least 40,000 hours immersed in mass media, watching movies or videos or TV programs or playing video games and listening to music and reading popular books like Harry Potter. But what I found so incredible was that this makes entertainment amongst the most influential of our influential teachers of our children, and that this becomes their prime source of values, spiritual instruction, and behavior modification. And, you know, so many children are unsupervised with what they watch on television. I was just amazed to learn that 75% of American teens have a TV in their room, and a third of them have their own personal computers, where they spend, apart from other things, an average of 2 hours a day online and can go absolutely anywhere they want, from occultism into pornography. And there were some very interesting statistics on pornography. I mean, I think Gods of Entertainment is just filled with very eye-opening and completely shocking facts that just, you know, it should make us cringe at the fact that whoever controls the media controls the culture that elects the politicians, who appoint the judges, who shape our political, social, legal rules and laws, and our whole spiritual worldview.
And, of course, it's in the hands of five major corporations. Now, you did have a theologian there that you talked to about this whole idea of mythology, and there's so much emphasis sometimes in books or even on videos on mythology, but there can be problems in this mythology as well, can't there?
Yes, in fact, I have, since making that Harry Potter, the video on Harry Potter Witchcraft Repackaged, Making Evil Look Innocent, I've had hundreds of emails from people asking about Lord of the Rings and Tolkien's books, and, you know, how can we separate myth and magic. And so this was one of the areas that I felt that we could try and touch on. And so I asked a theologian and apologetics professor at Calvary Bible College to help us with how could we equip ourselves to defend ourselves against the sort of onslaught that is coming through special effects and the media. And he came up with some very, very good advice, and that with the advent of these special effects and the power of ideas, you know, how much power has the power of ideas given us? And can it open up dangerous spiritual realms? And what do we do when, you know, with the whole concept of imagination? And interestingly enough, in the Bible, the use of imagination in the Bible is never a good use. It's always the imagination of our spirit. The imagination of man's spirit takes him into all sorts of very dangerous realms of investigation into the supernatural areas. I mean, not that I'm saying there's anything wrong, obviously, with imagination. When you deal with reality. Like if you imagine, I wonder what my white wall would look like if I painted it with hunter green paint, and you've got the real hunter green paint in front of you, and you can imagine that the reality of that color going onto a wall, or the reality of scientific facts in sort of going into a something that one is inventing, an invention. But once you start taking your mind into imagining that you can be like God, imagining that you can have power, imagining that you can twist and bend reality to suit your own manipulations, of course that becomes very dangerous. And we see that fantasy and myth and the use of imagination, especially as propagated in the Harry Potter phenomenon, takes the power of the occult to new levels. And so, you know, how do we Christians measure our participation in fantasy and the fantasy genre, and are there any spiritual dangers? So I asked these theologians these questions, and we had some very interesting answers.
And I think that's really important for Christians to begin thinking about these things and to learn the answers from people who have studied and looked into this, because our minds are under attack today. They're under attack from every side, and how do you get away from it? Watching anything on television, almost every television program has a hidden message there, and they know how to use music, they know how to use shading and innuendos to lead you into basically compromising your fundamental beliefs in Christianity, because there is a tremendous anti-Christian or anti-Judeo-Christian tendency, agenda, I would say. I think it's a hidden agenda. I think people really don't believe it. They believe Hollywood's there to make money. And, of course, Carol brings out so beautifully in her video, The Gods of Entertainment, is that they know, in Hollywood, they know that if they put out these depraved, horrible, terrible, degrading movies, they're not going to make anywhere near as much money as if they had good, wholesome movies, and a good, wholesome movie will make maybe up to 6 times more than the depraved one, but they're not interested in money. They're interested in corrupting our souls. And when you understand that, then a lot of what goes on really makes more sense. If you listen to Jay Leno and some of our so-called comedians, who do not have to use filth and depravity, in there to be humorous, but they do it, or at least the writers do it, because they have an agenda. And there is an attack on the moral foundation of this America that is leading America further and further away from God, down into a death spiral, really, towards the destruction of our society. There's no instance in all history where a nation has turned its back on God and that nation has survived, and that's just the direction America's headed. In fact, one of the Islamic clerics I was reading on the internet this morning said America is destroyed. Of course, it hasn't fallen yet. The structure is still there. But America has been destroyed, because no great civilization disappears all at one time. It's a low, slow, gradual process. And I think that's going on today. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. And I think that's exactly the message that I like to put out in the videos that I make, that while there is we see the Islamic terrorists, and they plot to infiltrate and conquer the non-Muslim world around them, and that's one of the themes I brought out in The New Barbarians, with them that these kids understand that they're going to destroy Israel, and they're going to destroy the oil wealth, that they're going to possess, rather, the oil wealth of the Middle East, and destroy Americans, and etc. So we've got the Islamic terrorists who plot to infiltrate and conquer the non-Muslim world around them, and then there's this other conflict being advanced from within society itself, which is the war over the moral standards of each nation. And this is the war that the powers, the supernatural powers, that are fighting against good, and it's this moral standard. It's a very, very serious conflict being advanced from within society itself. And we need to pray and exercise spiritual authority and understand this battle, because it's destroying us.
Supernatural Power, The Battle Between Good and Evil. I think really, in that title, we can crystallize and see clearly what this is really all about. And certainly in your Gods of Entertainment video, in your Supernatural Powers video, even in your Harry Potter video, your witchcraft video, and certainly the one on the New Barbarians. We see this. The trouble is most Americans don't even realize there's a war going on, that America, our values, our future, our culture are under attack today. And, of course, behind the overt and very obvious threats is the spiritual threat that has an agenda. And I thought you brought out so beautifully in this video, The Gods of Entertainment, as this man from Hollywood says, yes, most people think the agenda is money in Hollywood, but it really isn't. It's the destruction of Christianity. Carol, that we're just about out of time. Do you have a parting thought for our listeners?
Be on the alert. Be educated. Listen, Dr. Stan, you do such a marvelous job. You have got so many wonderful, wonderful products that are alerting us, and I thank you so much for the great work you're doing. And just be encouraged and be strengthened, and I just pray that your viewers, your listeners, take all this seriously to heart and are really moved to realize this other conflict that is being advanced from within society itself. It's the war over our moral standards and our very, very deep supernatural, it's just an attack against God himself.
Amen to that. Well, God bless you, Carol. Thank you so very much, and we'll look forward to having you on one of our morning program here, I think, next week or so. Good night, and God bless.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's wonderful being your guest. Good night.
Bye-bye. Okay, this has been Carol Matriciana, and I hope you enjoyed hearing our interview with her. Let me once again mention her videos, The Gods of Entertainment, which is one we've really talking about primarily this evening. It's the latest one, and it's not available yet on DVD, but it is available on VHS, and it's about 70 minutes long. Great clips there, simply seeing, Mel Gibson's response to Diane Sawyer when she says, well, what are these dark forces? What do they really want, these dark forces that are trying to keep you from putting out your film, The Passion? And his response is worth the entire cost of that video. You need to see this to understand. Lots of clips from lots of our modern movies, but tying this together into an understanding that Christianity, our nation, our values, our future, our families, the souls of America, is under attack today. Now, that's, of course, The Gods of Entertainment, the Supernatural Power video, a powerful, powerful video covering this true attack on America from within, a spiritual attack. And then, of course, the video on the New Barbarians, the film footage that you will never see on American television about how the Islamic youth are being conditioned for the coming Third World War, because, ladies and gentlemen, the Third World War is upon us. They just haven't told you. They're going to be drafting your sons and daughters. The legislation's already in the hopper in Washington, D.C. They don't want to bring it up before the elections, because you won't be voting for Tweedledum or Tweedledee. You might even be realizing that the whole system is fixed and rigged. So, but by next year or the year after that, they'll be talking about drafting your sons and daughters to send them overseas as cannon fodder in the new war with Islam. And, of course, it's all planned. It's all long-term planning. If you doubt that, you need to go to our website, RadioLiberty.com, and pull down our newsletters and read them carefully and check out the documentation. Could it really be true that there are people evil enough to plan wars? Well, if you haven't seen my video, Iraq, the Untold Story, or the syllabus that goes with it, and of course, all the documentation, how all of the wars of the last century were fought for far different reasons than anybody was ever allowed to know, that the boys who were sent overseas were allowed to know. They thought they were fighting for freedom. Why, the First World War, the slogan was, the war to make the world safe for democracy, the war to end all wars. And the boys went over to fight because that was to be the war to end all wars and make the world safe for democracy. You know, why would they want to make the world safe for democracy when our founding fathers didn't want a democracy? They knew it. Democracies always end up in tyranny. They, of course, they created an American Republic. Well, you need to get that video, Iraq, the Untold Story, and the syllabus goes with it because you'll find the documentation there. You will find no other place. And then, of course, Carol's other excellent videos on Harry Potter, and, of course, her video on witchcraft. All of these, I think, are so important that you have this information, that you help us disseminate it, because that's what we, our purpose of why I do what I do, is to give you the information so you can reach others. And you're going to have the responsibility. It doesn't matter if people don't want to hear you now. They will hear you sooner or later. They'll remember what you said as you try to bring out the fact we're involved in a spiritual battle being played out on a political, ideological, and cultural battlefield. Go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Tell others about our programs and encourage them to listen. Encourage them to go to our website where they can listen to our programs 5 hours a day and not get much of anything accomplished. But the links are there. The other networks are there. We're on 4 hours a day on shortwave, 5 hours a day on internet. A growing voice, and with your help, hopefully, will begin having some impact on what's going on. So we certainly ask you then to pray for America, to pray for Radio Liberty, to pray for my ministry, for our provision and our protection. And so until tomorrow, may the Lord be with you. Well, good evening. This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views, the views of our guests, the views of our callers, and of course we welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295, but please hold your calls for the time being. We have with us right now on the line Ron Brown, and Ron supports Radio Liberty. He's been analyzing what's happening monetarily for many, many years. I guess about 20 years now, isn't it, Ron?
25
years. Well, that's a good long time. Be looking and trying to figure out what's happening. America has really done the most amazing thing. We've created incredible prosperity based upon absolutely nothing but artificially created money, created by a privately owned central bank, that's the Federal Reserve System, that has nothing to do with the federal government. They give it the title, government is going to go ahead and nominate the chairman of the Federal Reserve Bank, but he's really appointed by the people who work behind the scenes, the people who control the banking industry in this country. And then, of course, the government and the Senate rubber stamps their choice, because these are the people with the big bucks who buy and sell the politicians. These are the people with the big bucks who buy and sell the media. These are the big bucks, people with big bucks who buy and sell the drug corporations and the major industrial corporations in the United States. And these are the people who truly are the force behind the throne. But you see, the average individual doesn't understand that. They don't understand we have a fiat money system. And there is no instance in all history where you have a fiat money system with neither gold nor silver behind it where that system has worked. We tried many times in the past. It was tried in the early decades of the 18th century by a man named John Law, who convinced the King of France that he could produce prosperity simply by printing money. And the kings always do. They spend too much. And so he wanted that prosperity. And so John Law came in and created a bank and began printing money. And it really worked great, and everybody had lots of money, and everybody was prosperous, and then when things began to slow down, they had to print more money, and of course the value of the money gradually decreased, because there was so much of it there, and then of course, that it was sort of like a junkie that have to keep taking fixes closer and closer together, and the same thing happens when you create this artificial money. And you can just infuse the market with trillions of dollars, as they're doing here in the United States. But pretty soon they've got to come up with more trillions and more trillions, and eventually, of course, the whole system collapses, especially since we are not an isolated country. We are tied into the rest of the world, and today we are totally dependent upon other countries to buy our national debt. And if they don't buy it, then the Federal Reserve has to buy our debt, because we're running somewhere this year, they will acknowledge it, close to $600 billion deficit. In other words, we're spending $600 billion more than we'll be taking in, and they tell us the debts don't matter. But well, Ron, tell us what you think about what's going on. Do you really think it's true that debt doesn't matter?
Well, of course not. You know, this is just like John Law. We've had a lot of fun for a while on this board and printing press money, but it will come to an end. And I would say that if we were any other nation, printing money the way we are, we would have already been rejected by the world. But for the last 40 years, we've been the world's reserve currency, and so the rest of the world has put all of their reserve monies and currency into dollar instruments. So in effect, we're almost holding them hostage, because if the dollar collapses, they lose their investment and they lose their trade partners. So they're kind of trapped rowboat with us, and so they have to kind of keep the dollar from collapsing, and that's what's buying us a little bit of time. But it's just a question of time before the world slowly finds a way to disengage from their overdependence on us and reject the U.S. as the world's reserve currency. And I think we all can see it coming.
And of course, now there are other alternatives. There's the euro, there's the gold dinar, which is increasingly popular in the Islamic world, which is increasingly hating America and everything we stand for. And of course, certainly what we're doing in the Middle East is not winning any friends among the Muslims. And even many of the people in Iraq who were very, very happy to get rid of Saddam Hussein once some of their relatives have been killed, once they see that, you know, even after we've a year after the war, we still haven't got the electricity going, we don't have water for them, they don't have any jobs, the situation is just totally chaotic, and now they see us turning our power over to this phony government, which is not an independent government. The man in charge of it just happened to work for the CIA, Mr. Lowy, before he was, of course, appointed by the committee that we appointed to be the new ruler, and there have been no elections at all. We're going to have to keep putting off those elections. Things are so unstable. And the rest of the Islamic world recognizes this, and they're getting more and more angry and frustrated. And so my feeling is that they will intentionally try to go their own way, getting away from America's dominance monetarily and production-wise. What do you see happening from that point of view, Ron?
I agree with that. And also, the world has needed us to trade. For example, OPEC needed to sell their oil to us. And so they couldn't abandon us you know, because not only that, because they have all their money invested with us too. But what they need to find is a replacement to the U.S. as the big buyer, the big consumer. And of course, we all know what that is going to be. It's going to be China and India, who are now becoming the big consumers of the world. So that gives the rest of the world someone to sell to, so they don't need us as desperately as they used to, especially since we're paying for our trade with a deflating or devaluing currency.
Now, of course, my understanding is that the value of the dollar in reference to the euro has gone what down? Is it 30, somewhere between 30 and 40% over the last 3 years?
At one point it was down 40, and then we've had the dollar rally for the last 3, 4, 5 months. And now it seems to be peaking out and starting to falter again. So if we break the new lows on the dollar, then that's going to signal another down wave where we could actually take it down to 83, 84 on the dollar index, which right now it's about 88. But it's come down from 92 to 93 in just the last 2 or 3 weeks. So.
Well, my understanding is that, you know, for many months, probably for several years, why the other countries, China, Japan, Germany, have been buying American dollars. These are the debt we have. In other words, the government has to have money. It doesn't have any money of its own. So it either has to get the money from taxation, but if it's not getting the money from taxation, it only has two other alternatives. One is to borrow, the other is to print money, which inflates or increases the currency. By increasing the value of the number of dollars out there, you decrease its value, and of course that is not something you want to do. So you borrow, and so we've been borrowing money from China and Japan, and somewhere between $1.6 and $1.7 billion every single day. We have to borrow to keep going. But my understanding is that recently China and Japan and some of the other countries have quit buying our money, and so they're just having to monetize that debt, create money out of nothing to pay it off. Have you heard that?
I sure have. You know, you don't know what percentage they're having to monetize now. But see, the interest rates in the bond market are tied together. So if foreigners refuse to buy our dollars, what's scarier is if they not only refuse to buy more dollars to finance our new debts, what happens if they try to cash in the bonds that they've been accumulating over the last 20, 30 years? They have, what, some up in the trillions of dollars of our debt paper. So as they refuse to buy them, then that forces our Fed to step in and monetize them, because if no one buys those bonds, if there's no market for them, then the bond market, by definition, would collapse. And if the bond market goes down, the corollary to that is that interest rates go through the roof.
No, of course, what by monetizing, I mean, the Federal Reserve creates money out of nothing to buy the bonds just to sort of keep the game going. But when they create new money, that's highly inflationary.
Right. And see, when they're monetizing, if they don't tell anyone that they're printing money to buy those bonds, it gives the illusion or the impression that there is a demand for those bonds, when in reality it's nothing more than funny money that's buying them. But they have to do that to maintain, because, as you know, and you said many times, the interest rates are key. We have this massive debt structure that's been built up over the years. We have a real estate bubble that's built on low interest rates. If interest rates ever start to spike up, then it's going to be like a gigantic pin pricking that bubble.
And of course, what's really happened is they've created a lot of increased liquidity in the market by allowing people to borrow money on their houses, and simply with this artificial housing market that we have in some areas, why a house has been increasing 10 or 20% in a period of a month. And so then you can go out and you can borrow more money on your house, and boy, you've got all this value in your house, and you might as well go ahead and spend that money, because after all, your house is worth so much more. But it's all artificial. I mean, there's nothing behind it. But it's all expectation, and my goodness, we buy a house today, and it's going to be worth another year. It's going to be worth another 30 or 40% or 50%. But it's been increasingly accelerating, and I feel we're just at the top of this housing budget. About 30 to 40%, and maybe even more, are adjustable rate mortgages, because they're so very cheap. The problem is with an adjustable rate mortgage is when the interest rates go up, why they adjust the interest rate. And we're going to have an awful lot of people out there who I don't think are going to be able to pay their mortgage payments. And then, of course, they're going to begin losing that property. What are your thoughts on that? And how does that fit into this whole scenario?
Well, you know, it's the equivalent of giving a 20-year-old a credit card and just saying, go have fun, and he can be a big guy for a while, but eventually he's going to run out of credit. And then all of a sudden, all of that comes back to haunt him because he can't pay off the debt. And that's where we are. People have been borrowing from their real estate. They've been taking advantage of these low interest rates to just keep up with the Joneses and keep the spending going. And, of course, our economy has reached a point that that's what the government has to push, because we're all built on consumption. So they have to keep running the printing press faster and faster to try to keep the thing from imploding. And it literally has become a Ponzi scheme. You must keep it growing. You cannot allow the system to ever contract, because if it does, it becomes like a 29-style banking panic where it just implodes overnight. So you're seeing a lot of desperate acts to keep this bubble or this house of cards from collapsing. You still there?
I think what people don't understand is interest rates now have already started going up. Why do they have interest rates going up? Well, they have to go up, number one, to attract other people to buy our bonds, because they have to get the price on the bonds up to the point where people are willing to buy them, where they're not actually losing more by the deflation of the dollar than they're getting in return interest on the bonds, number one. And number two, of course, is that they have to do something, because although they tell us inflation is only 4%, why secretly they know it's up to 8 to 9%. And inflation is the greatest enemy you have for a stable society. And, you know, if you look at the inflation index, what they've done is they've taken all the things that have gone up in price and taken them out of the how they evaluate the inflation. In other words, they've taken gasoline out of there. Well, we have to have gasoline. We're dependent on it. They simply arbitrarily took that out. They took food out. They've taken two or three other things out. And they said, well, look at, the prices haven't gone up at that much at Walmart on clothing that's coming in from China, or clothing or shoes that are coming in from Korea. And that's true. But that's not where the real world is. I mean, it's eating and traveling and things of that sort. And those prices are going right through the roof, aren't they?
That's right. And a while back, an analyst said, I can't wait till the day when they come out and say, excluding everything, we have no inflation. But that's about what they're doing, is they're just taking everything that's going up out of the index, so it looks like, we're reaching a point where you can't fool the people anymore. Every time you go down to fill up your car or to buy groceries or anything you do now, everyone knows that inflation is going up much faster than the government is telling us. The other thing I would say is, they keep talking about raising interest rates. The reality is they cannot stop the inflation. Now, they may talk about raising rates, but if they keep the print press running faster and faster and faster, they're not fighting inflation at all, are they?
No. And that's the thing, that interest rates, you can get those rates up to 10-12%, but until you start cutting back on new money production or start pulling money out of circulation, the inflation continues. That's the problem. And, of course, the real problem is, what happens if countries overseas that are holding all these dollars that we've created, we've been exporting our inflation to other countries, what happens if they want to unload those dollars, turn them into something that is tangible, like gold or silver or commodities, and they just send those dollars back here? Then what happens to America?
Well, we're reaching a point where you can't fool the people. The whole world is trying to figure out a way to gradually get out of the dollars without collapsing it. And as they do that, then, one, they're creating so many more bogus dollars that it just would take 0.1% of the dollars sloshing around the globe trying to get into tangibles such as gold and silver, and there wouldn't be enough to go around. So at some point they won't be able to manipulate and hold these markets back, and we're starting to see that, by the way, right now. The gold and silver just the last week have had a pretty amazing recovery from the manipulation that went on the last two or three months. Silver was up, for example, 31 cents in one day yesterday. And typically when you see that sort of move in the markets, you would see them beat it down the next day, you know, call out the cavalry to force it back down. And they tried, but it wouldn't stay down, and it popped up again today. So that's like three straight days where silver's going up over 50 cents, you know, combined. So that tells you the psychology is starting to change very quickly.
And, of course, traditionally, money has been based upon gold and silver. And these fellows came along and said, we don't need that. We're so smart. We can create artificial prosperity. You just let us print the money and let us control the money and let us make money out of nothing, and we'll make everybody rich and prosperous. And really, it is amazing how well it has worked. Of course, they are the ones who've really prospered, because they're the ones who've been able to, you know, gain the political power and gain control of the media and gain control of the industries and gain control of the universities. But it's all been done with artificially created money. And, of course, the little guy has done pretty well here as well, and we're doing the same sort of thing. We're bringing prosperity to China by sending our plants over there, by actually subsidizing our plants if they'll leave America, taking the jobs away from here. And, of course, the trouble is, as more and more of our jobs leave, as more and more of our industries leave, why, eventually, this is going to have a profound impact. And what, if you see what's happening to the wage levels, they're falling. United Airlines is making demands on their employees. They're just going to have to cut back on their incomes. They're going to have to cut back on their pension benefits. And you know, what's happening in United is taking place all across America. The big corporations are just laying off people right and left. And many of the people who are staying there, you know, are having to take reductions in wages. Of course, unless you work for government, you always get anything you want. But as far as the rest of the people, they're having real problems. And if you lose your job and you get a new one, chances are you're going to take a cut of 20, 30, 40% in income. And when that happens, of course, then, of course, we begin to see the living standards going down. Well, we're going to have to take a quick break, but we'd really like to hear from you. Get your thoughts on what's going on. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. And when we get back from this break, give us a call right here at Radio Liberty. And our guest this evening, Ron Brown, and of course, she's been studying this for a good long while. Well, this is Dr. Stan, our guest this evening, Ron Brown. Well, Ron, of course, you mentioned the gold and silver. I know silver's been up. Has gold been up pretty well as well?
Oh, yeah, both of them. They had gold back down like 389, and it's up at 409 in just the last week or so. So there's been something going on out there that's bringing people back into the market with a flare, because it's really starting to show life.
Well, I think the most interesting thing is the realization that it's all manipulated. I believe the stock market is manipulated, although you're not supposed to. It's against the law when the government does it, working in concert with the Federal Reserve and certain the big financial houses. You know it's being manipulated. And they've certainly done the same thing with commodities and with gold and silver, haven't they?
Of course. And, you know, they really admit to manipulate in many different ways. They have the exchange stabilization fund and, you know, all these things they do that they freely admit that they're stabilizing the market. Well, stabilizing is really manipulating. not allowing a free market to function.
That's a nice way to sort of get around telling the truth, isn't it? Well, they're experts at lying, and then they have the complete control of the media, so they ultimately can control what people think. We've got David calling from Aptos. Hi, David. How are you doing?
Thank you very much. Very nice to hear you gentlemen talk about a very essential subject and very quite pertinent to the days we live in. I just wanted to mention, I just heard this recently, that one of the reasons why Iraq's being punished is that they went to euros instead of dollars in the year 2000, and Russians, who used to use dollars as a hedge against the decrepit Soviet Union, are now taking their billions of dollars out of their coffee cans and changing them into euros. So I think it's really fascinating what you're talking about tonight. Have you heard about that? The Iraqis going to a euro standard in 2000 and the whole Russian thing? I mean, what I've been hearing is corroborating what you gentlemen are talking about.
Vaughn, you want to comment on that?
Yeah, Hussein announced that they were going to switch from pricing their oil and dollars to euros about 3 to 4 months before the war started. So, you know, we can speculate on whether that was the reason. I suspect it might have had something to do with it. I'm not privy to know if that's the whole reason, but I'm sure it does. You know, the one thing that the U.S. cannot allow, if we are so dependent on foreign money to keep our system going, is for the dollar to be repudiated as the world's reserve currency. And it's inevitable that it's coming, but they will try to put it off, obviously, for as long as they can.
Well, I think, David, what you say is absolutely right. I do not think that is the major reason for the war, because we know the war was planned long before that.
Oh, yeah.
We, of course, read the Wesley Clark's book, General Wesley Clark, why he will tell you that he went to the Pentagon shortly after 9/11, ran into one of the people he knew there. They said they'd been rehearsing this war for many years, you know, in the mid-1990s. We know in 1998 why the project, the New American Century Group, was writing to Bill Clinton and saying, you know, we have to go to war with Iraq. We know that as soon as Bush administration came in, if you read the book by Paul O'Neill, it's called The Price of Loyalty, and he tells you the first cabinet meeting he's going to, you know, you expect they're going to be talking about the financial situation, Social Security. What are they talking about? Why Rumsfeld, Cheney, and Wolfowitz are talking about going to war with Iraq, not why we're going, but how we're going to get into the war. So certainly the plan was already there to go to war with Iraq, but certainly the financial implications were very, very real. Hold just a moment. We'll be right back here.
Sure.
And I will tell you, David, I think the one thing that the people who control our central bank are frightened to death of is that people are going to move out of the dollar and are going to move into foreign currencies. And this is one reason, I believe, that they're creating all this new colored currency. And, oh, they're telling us, oh, it's all about counterfeits. And, oh, we've got to just control counterfeiting. And I think it's because they're going to a two-tiered monetary system. And they don't let the American people, they can't let the American people understand what's really going on today. Or the American people, you know, once they begin to lose confidence in a monetary system, why it's terrible. Just 2 years ago, 2.5 years ago, why they wiped out the entire middle class of Argentina.
Absolutely.
And I fear that the same thing is going to happen here in America. But maybe it's going to have to happen to get people to understand that they have to be involved in what's taking place. Anything else you'd like to say?
Yeah, I came in when you guys were talking about Islamic fundamentalism and that sort of thing. And the thing is, I've really come across my desk through watching certain movies like The Control Room about the Al Jazeera network and other readings I've done, is that what's diabolic about our Middle East policy is that we create a situation where there's no room for the local moderates to try to say any voice of reason. We keep poking the rabid dog, and then the rabid dog attacks us and say, hey, see, we have to kill this rabid dog. And there are Arabs over there saying, dude, you're not helping us. We're the moderate. We're swept away by our own fanatics in our own countries. And I feel like it's a diabolical thing where, like, we create a Middle East policy which is like, oh, let's make the craziest elements of their society even crazier, and then they attack us. If you make a dog rabid, even though it's your fault, of course you're going to have to kill it.
I like to use the analogy of poking a stick at a rattlesnake and never be surprised when he strikes back at you. What are your thoughts on that, Ron?
It's so hard to get a feel for what's going on. Obviously, we're doing the wrong thing. I think we're in way over our heads.
We're more unsafe than they were after 9/11.
You're absolutely right. There's a wonderful book we did an interview on yesterday with Joseph Podansky, who is the chairman of the Congressional Task Force on Terrorism and Unconventional Warfare. And it was tragic that Mr. Podansky has a terrible accent, but what he had to say, I thought it was a great, great interview. His book is called The Secret History of the War in Iraq. And his point he makes in this book is that what we have done is simply to drive drive the people of the Arab world into the hands of the Islamic radicals. And you're absolutely right. The moderate Muslim is caught in the middle, and we will not support him, and the other side will kill him if he doesn't join them. And I think we're going to see a resurgence of radical Islam that we have not seen, you know, for 1,000 years.
And you know what's scary to me is that you listen to some of these pundits in Fox News Network, and they rail about Al-Qaeda and Taliban and Iraq and everything, but you notice they never mention Saudi Arabia, our supposed ally, who were most of the hijackers and the planes were Saudis. Saudis export the worst form of intolerant Islam around the entire Islamic region, including Central Asia, with their Wahhabist viewpoints. And it's just like, they don't ever say, they rail, but they lie by omission.
Well,
that's why that's the whole story.
One of the most interesting things is the, you know, the just the terrible moral indignation of the beheading of Berg and a couple of other people, of Korean prisoners, and it is a terrible thing. But you know, every week in Chop Chop Square in Riyadh in Saudi Arabia, they lop off a dozen heads and a couple of hundred hands and feet of people. They've been doing this for years. When was the last time you saw that on television here?
Oh yeah, well you catch your slice of it. If you see Michael Moore's Fahrenheit 9/11, he actually goes into the whole Saudi thing and just shows a beheading our supposed allies who are living in the 15th century.
Right.
They're savages.
We're living in a world gone mad, Dave. We'll just keep listening to Radio Liberty. And we'll do our best we can at least
Thank
to
you.
Try to give you the information you're not going to get elsewhere.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Hey, well, that's Dave's good to have us with us. And if you're out there and you'd like to give us a call, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. But if you're living in the Central Coast of California, please don't use that number. Give us a call at 464-8295. That's 464-8295. We'd love to hear from you, and of course, we hope that you'll want to get more information on this subject we're talking about today, because I think one of the greatest threats to our nation, certainly I think that the Islamic threat is the threat, but the thing that will destroy us more than anything is the moral breakdown and a collapse of our economic system. And you must understand that there is no gold in Fort Knox, and we have this from another very good sources. They can't let the American people know the euro is backed by gold, 15% gold. The gold dinar will be backed by gold. And, of course, they're encouraging all of the countries of the Orient of Asia to get behind a gold-backed currency. What are we going to do here in America? Well, the only thing you could do would be to collapse the currency and start over again. And with that, the loss of everything. We're going to be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, and our guest this evening is Ron Brown, and we're just talking about what's happening economically. And if you have a question or comment, our telephone number again, 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Ron, you know, I thought that classic move, here it was about 6 weeks ago when they manipulated the price of gold and silver down, and of course they manipulated the commodity markets, they created, all of this, articles, you know, to tell people, oh, there's just no value in gold and silver, you don't want to be in that, and it was all pretty much make-believe, wasn't it?
Yeah, you know, if you step back and look at where the markets were at that point in time, if you recall, the Dow Jones was breaking below 10,000, which is a critical, critical level. If it breaks down there, then we could see 7,000 on the Dow, which would, of course, send the whole economy into a deflationary or recession, depression, whatever you want to call it. Secondly, the price of oil had broken above $40 a barrel. You had interest rates. The bond market had lost 10, 12, 15%. So that means interest rates were threatening to spike to the upside. And as a corollary to that, or the gold and silver were starting to rise and get out of control. Silver was approaching $8.30 an ounce, and gold was $4.30. So they were ready to break to the upside. So obviously the monetary authorities were in deep trouble, and they had to do something to try to stop the bleeding, and of course that's when they call out the cavalry, They come in and they just blast the markets and the futures market. They just sell till they finally force the markets down. And, you know, part of it is it's part of the spin game. As gold and silver start to show life and profits where people are attracted to it, and there were a lot of people starting to ready to, you know, never bought gold and silver before, ready to stick their toe in the water and start buying, and that's the one thing they cannot allow. So once you bust the market with the vengeance they did, the timid, the ones that have never bought before, just kind of back off and say, oh, maybe I don't need to buy gold. It's too volatile for me. And, of course, that's what they're trying to accomplish.
And I think the one thing is they do not want people to understand the history of money. Money has always been related to something of intrinsic value. And the idea that we can take intrinsic value away and of course, we can trust not government, because government is not what's doing this. It is the privately owned central banks of the world. All the central banks are privately owned. All of them are controlled by people in sort of a, well, call it a brotherhood, call it what you will, the financial elite of the world. As Thomas Jefferson said, if you read what he said about banking, he saw within banking the vehicle by which they would be able to destroy our country. And if you ever want his writings on that, we'd be glad to get them for you. But, of course, they make profit on something they don't even own. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. Our guest is Ron Brown, and Ron's been at this business for a long time. Ron, why don't you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you? And you've written a couple of things on finances. I thought your last article on what's happening financially was really great.
Yeah, if anyone would like a copy of that, just call me at 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561, and I'll be glad to send you those two reports. But I think, you know, the monetary system, every fiat system, as we've talked about before, is always collapses, and ours is in the process of unraveling, and the powers to be are going to keep it together as long as they can.
No, they got to keep it together at least through the election. I think that's the big thing right now. Get through this election, and then after that, why, they can always blame whatever happens on Osama bin Laden.
That's right. They'll have something to blame it on that created the crisis or the panic. And just like 9/11 was the excuse for the stock market, which was already going down rather precipitously before the 9/11, but they blamed it all on that, of course.
All right, well, of course, now, what do you think people should be doing at this time? I mean, you know, you've been studying this for 25 years. What are your suggestions for people out there in the listening audience who are sort of, I mean, maybe they've never heard anything like this before. Maybe they really believe that you can make money out of nothing and everybody can live prosperously forever. It's sort of like Monopoly, you know, and it's really great. You end up with all the money, and you end up with all the houses, and you end up with all the apartment houses, but in the end, it's all paper. There's nothing there. There's no real value. And you've won the game, but you really don't have anything when the game's over. And that's really what's happening today. How can people protect themselves in view of what's taking place?
Well, the first place they have to start is they have to start waking up to what is going on, because if there's no awareness of this monetary scam that's about to take all of their savings, and they won't see any reason to protect themselves from it. And let's face it, most of us have all of our education, all of our experience has been in paper assets. It's been in either real estate or the stocks or, you know, just the paper investments. And yet that is what's being threatened now, and yet not one in 100 really can see that is the threat to their you know, to their well-being, because the spin masters on Wall Street have convinced people that we're just on the verge of a turnaround and economic recovery, and, you know, everything's going to be hunky-dory again. So until you wake up to the fact that there is a threat out there, then no one's going to listen or want to buy gold and silver. But that is obviously the way to protect yourself, and it has been throughout history. When paper currencies are repudiated, and they always are because they're based on nothing but confidence, then eventually it's the tangibles, the gold and silver, which has been biblical, historical money throughout the ages, that people will go to. You know, in Germany, it's always, you know, to look at the extreme. And but in Germany, 1921, in fact, I have a chart in front of me that shows the cost of gold in terms of German Reichsmarks. And in 1919, it took 70 German Reichsmarks to buy 1 ounce of gold. By 1923, it took 87 trillion Reichsmarks to buy 1 ounce of gold. So I said, goes without saying that if you had your money in paper assets, then you lost everything.
And that people don't understand. They say it could never happen here. It could happen over in Russia, or it could happen down in Argentina. It could happen in Mexico, but this could never happen here. And I would ask, why can't it happen here? Are we so much smarter than anybody else in the world? And, of course, you know, we hear about this recovery, and it's really great. And yet, of course, last month they created 125,000 jobs. They should have to make almost 300,000 jobs just to make up for all the new people coming into the labor market. We're not making the jobs, and the jobs we're making are not good jobs. In fact, the only thing that's really keeping the economy going today really is, you know, the defense, and of course throwing money into the defense defense production, so this is at least producing some new jobs. And of course we're getting the people off the streets, and I think increasingly as we're going to have to increase our military forces, and they're going to have the draft, so we won't have all the young people coming out of school and being unemployed. They'll get a nice low-paying job working for the government, and they'll get all sorts of training on how to shoot and kill and do things like that. So, you know, and of course they're going to be caught in cannon fodder in this war we're creating with the Muslim world. This is the frightening thing. And where is the outcry from the mothers and fathers? They just don't believe it could happen. But believe me, you can tell it's going to happen because they keep denying it in Washington, D.C. And when they keep denying it and denying it and denying it, you know that that's exactly what they're planning to do. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or here on the Central Coast of California, 464-8295. Well, you talk about people buying gold and silver. How should they buy this? What form should it be? Should they get bars? Should they get collectible coins? Should they get bullion coins as far as gold? How should they buy silver in rounds or bars or junk silver? Or what should they be doing? And is there any shortage of this? We've been hearing of the shortage of silver for years, and yet why you're still able to get the silver, even though we're told that there's this tremendous shortage of it.
Okay, let's start with the first question, and that is, should you buy bullion-type coins or should you buy collector coins? I'm a firm believer that you should be buying bullion-type coins. The average person, when they first get involved in trying to look into gold and silver, unfortunately, where they have their first introduction is through some numismatic dealer who is sponsoring the different Patriot religious program, and they always are going to put out the spiel. It's a fear thing that they spread, is that bullion, gold, and silver will be confiscated by the government. Therefore, you need to buy these collector coins, which will not be confiscated. And yet, the problem is, if you don't know what you're doing in that arena, you can easily pay 25, 50, 75% markup on the coins. So you'd have to have a tremendous rise in the price of gold just to get to break even. But see, most people aren't aware of that market, and they go into it out of fear. Yet, I think that's basically what it is. It's fear tactics to get people to buy these high-priced coins. So I suggest people buy bullion-type coins. Second place, I don't think in a monetary crisis, collector coins are going to be the great thing, where people are going to be looking for hamburgers, not filet mignon. They're going to want something that they can use in barter and trade, not some high collectible thing that's totally worthless in the market. So I think bullion is where you start. I like silver much better than gold. I think silver will outperform gold a minimum of fivefold, maybe as much as tenfold. See, right now the gold-to-silver ratio is 65-1, which means gold is 65 times the price of silver. Yet if you look at the fundamentals, we only produce about 7 times more silver than gold. We've been consuming the silver more than we produced for the last 50 years, so they're literally at this point in time, and this is something that shocks people, and that is there's literally more gold in the warehouses available to the markets in ounces 20 times more gold than there is silver. So it's hard to justify that gold should be 65 times the price of silver. So I think the ratio will go to a minimum of 10 to 1, which means your silver investments on average would earn at least 5 to 6 fold more than your gold investments. Not that there's anything wrong with gold. So in the silver, I suggest people start with what we call the pre-1965 coinage, because prior to 1965, our dimes, quarters, halves, and silver dollars were all 90% silver. So that's a good place to start because it's small increments of silver. You can't make any more of them, so they tend to go to a premium when the demand comes on the stream, and it's just a good place to start. The second thing I would buy in silver would be either the silver rounds, which are just little one-ounce pure silver medallions, or if you want to get a little fancier, buy the U.S. Eagles, which is the same thing. It's a one-ounce silver medallion, except it's minted by the U.S. Mint, and so there's going to be an extreme shortage of them in the future, so I think they will go to even higher and higher premiums because they're a very popular way of owning silver.
What about silver bars? What about gold bars? Would this be a good way to go?
You know, it's interesting that you ask that because of the one form of silver that's really starting to show signs of shortages is in the 100-ounce bars. I've got, just an example, I've got one client that bought about 50 bars back on May 10th, and they didn't get the last 10 bars to him until, like, yesterday. So it took them over 2 months to get just a measly 40 bars to a client.
Well, of course, the thing is, of course, if they didn't get them to him yesterday, well, the price of silver had gone up considerably by then. That's all, right?
Well, they'd already locked in their price, so that doesn't. Once you lock in your price to a dealer, then your price is set. Now it's just a question of them getting the coins, you know, the material to you. But for them to take 2 months to get anything, it tells you there's a real squeeze play going. And I was kind of confused about that because I've always thought the first thing that would go to a shortage would be these junk bags. And I've been wrong in that regard, and so I've had to kind of study and say, why is it that the 100-ounce bars are getting in the shortage before the bags? Because, see, you can't make any more of the junk coins. You can make a lot of 100-ounce bars. So the fact that they're drying up is kind of curious to me, so I started doing some research and checking around, and it's, once I see it, it's fairly obvious, and that is big investors buying silver don't want to mess with 50 bags because they're very hard to store. 100-ounce bars store very nicely. Plus, bags are not, you can't put those into an IRA. So 100-ounce bars go real nicely into an IRA program. So I think that's what's happening. You're seeing a lot of investors switching part of their IRA money into gold and silver, and 100-ounce bars are the most convenient way of doing it.
Of course, we're not reading about this in the paper at all. Certainly the last thing they want people to know is that a certain small part of our population is moving into gold and silver, because if you ever started getting a major move, why, the prices would skyrocket, wouldn't they?
Oh, my gosh. You know, if you look at the COMEX, which is the largest storage of silver in the world, they say there's 118, let's say 120 million ounces of silver. Now, only about 40 to 50 million ounces of that is actually available to the market. For example, Dr. Stan, if you wanted to store 10,000 or 20,000 ounces of silver on the COMEX because it's more convenient than you trying to store it yourself, that's your silver, but it's showing up on their inventory. Well, you may not be planning to sell that silver anytime soon, so just the fact that it's there doesn't mean it's available to the market. So if you just said there was 100 million ounces of silver, which there isn't, 100 million ounces times $6, that's $6 billion to buy all the silver basically in the world. So you can imagine what's going to happen if just 1/10 of 1% of the $100 trillion of paper money loses confidence in paper money and seeks the refuge of tangibles.
Well, now, what's happening in China? What's happening in India? Because I know in India, why, they've certainly always been very, very partial to silver. What is happening, though, in those countries? Because here we're talking about countries, with each one with over a billion people in them, and suddenly they're beginning to come alive. We know that over in India, why, so many of the answering machine, if you have a problem with your computer, you call the local fellow, and you get a fellow named Raj, but his name, they call him John, but his real name is Raj, and he's sitting over in New Delhi. Or Hewlett Packard, I had a problem with my Hewlett Packard printer, goes with my computer, and I got a fellow named Singh, you know, and he was over in Pakistan. So, but what we're doing is exporting the jobs. The people there are beginning to get money. They're just as happy as they can be. They'll work for 10% of what the Americans have worked for. But now that they're beginning to have large sums of money, of course, it's the money that used to be going into American jobs, now it's going into jobs in India and in China as part of the planned program of globalization, which is supported by the leaders of both political parties, who are dedicated to this idea of redistributing the wealth between nations. But what impact is that going to have on the price of gold and silver?
Well, of course, China has been legalizing gold and silver by the, the citizens of China for the last year or so. So it's obvious that what they're doing is they're setting the stage for their people to accumulate gold and silver, taking it off the market. And the same is happening in India, of course. And I would just, as a general statement, say as long as the dollar is getting weaker and weaker and weaker, which it is, and it is going to probably for the foreseeable future, you're going to see more people wanting to trade their dollars for something else. And some of that something else will be gold and silver.
No, so I think, the people over in China are not stupid at all. They're very, very smart. I mean, they've been oppressed for a long period of time, but they're hardworking, industrious people, extremely bright. And I don't think they believe in paper money. I think they want something tangible. Haven't they been having tremendous sales of gold in China?
You know, when they first opened the Shanghai Exchange, this was, I think, about a year or so ago, the early returns, and I haven't seen more recent returns, but the first month or two, the people were averaging over 1 million ounces of silver per day.
Was that silver or gold?
Silver is what I heard, and
okay,
they were buying
great.
An equivalent amount of gold, too. I've never got the exact figure on the gold.
Okay, well, there are not that many million ounces of silver out there. Of course, China apparently does end up with a certain amount of silver that they get from junk computers and things like that. There's silver in all of those things, or byproducts of mining. So they have a certain amount of silver of their own, don't they, that they actually produce there?
Sure, and a lot of the confusion over the Chinese production is we've shut down all of our refineries in the U.S. because of environmental reasons and whatever. And so a lot of ore is being refined in China, and it looks like that's production coming out of China, but we're sending it over there and getting it back. So who knows in a communist nation exactly what their production is, what their reserves are. There's been, of course, a lot of talk and hype that the Chinese have been dumping silver into the market the last 2, 3, 4 years. To the tune of somewhere around 50 to 60 to 70 million ounces a year. Who knows for sure what they're really dumping? And if they are, then one has to ask the question, why are they doing it? And I would say they have to be doing it because they're getting something in exchange for doing that. So it's a temporary thing that won't last for much longer if it is happening at all. So I think it's just a matter of time before the rest of the world starts to flee out of dollars and into gold and silver.
All right, fine. Well, of course, our guest is Ron Brown. And Ron, let's go ahead and give your telephone number and address. Once again, if people would like to get information from you, and get that last report you put out, is a great one.
Okay, if they'd like to copy of it, just call me at 1-800-595-0561. That's 1-800-595-0561.
All right, fine. And what are your parting thoughts for our listeners this evening?
Oh, Dr. Stan, you and I have been fighting this battle, and you're trying to get people to wake up to what's happening, and yet people can't see it because of all the hype. And so people are just going to have to wake up that something serious is coming down, and that life in America is about to change no matter what. And if they don't do something different than what they're doing now, then they're going to have a tough time surviving financially.
And, of course, you've got to get out of debt, and you just got to pay your debt down just as far as you possibly can, because what happens if you lose your job? Well, you don't think you're going to lose your job, but I've found run into so many people who've been working someplace for 20 years, and all of a sudden they get called in, and that's the end of their job. Now, if you're self-employed, that's all well and good, and if, you know, if there's going to be a demand for what you have, well, you're probably going to be able to survive. But if they destroy the value of our currency, and there is a very real possibility that this is what's going to happen, because there is no way in the world that they can possibly meet all the debt obligations that we have. We've got, over $7 trillion in national, just the federal debt, and then we've got all the state debts out there, and then we got all the personal debts that are out there. But the real problem is the federal government has promised to give everybody Social Security, and they don't have any money. Oh, they tell you that the Social Security system is totally funded. Why, it's funded with government IOUs. But everybody's forgotten the most carefully kept secret of all time, and that is the government doesn't have any money. Other than what it takes from us by taxes, by force, what it borrows from the future generations or from other countries, or what it prints, and when it prints, why it creates inflation. So there's no way that they can possibly pay off the Social Security and the medical obligations that they have. They said that they're going to meet this, and they know it's a lie. Then they have all their federal funds, pensions, and then they have all their military pensions that they have to pay. And this goes on and on, and of course the states that promise large pensions to people, the corporations have promised large pensions to people, and they don't have the money to fund the pension funds. But you don't have to worry, because the federal government has said, well, if the corporations can't come in there and pay it, we will. Where is the federal government going to get the money? Right now they're borrowing from, well, our grandchildren, that really is what we're talking about. And people don't understand that we are in the most massive debt that any country has ever had throughout all recorded history. And the only way out of it is simply to monetize our way out of it, to create the money, to devalue the money, to destroy the value of the money, and then you can pay all of your debts off. It's very easy to do. You're giving them worthless money. We promise you $1 million. There it is. Of course, it's not going to buy much of anything. People say that couldn't happen here. Well, when you have irresponsible politicians, and when you have irresponsible people in the central bank, and we have a public that is totally blind to what's happening and believes that the good times are going to roll on forever, I think they've forgotten the lesson of history. Would you agree with that, Ron?
Sure. You know, we were talking earlier about the hyperinflation in Germany and said it couldn't happen here. Well, the reality, you have the same analogy or the same forces at play in 21 Germany. It was the Treaty of Versailles that forced Germany to keep paying reparations for the damages done during the war. Here we have a welfare state, and the worse things get, the more the welfare state has to keep funding it. So as our whole economy starts to unravel, then that's going to force the government to print more and more money to fund the welfare state, and that's the equivalent of the Treaty of Versailles. But we could very easily go into hyperinflation.
And let me just point out, we have a wonderful book. I know Ron's read it. It's called Fiat Money, Inflation in France. It was written 100 years ago by Andrew Dickinson White, who was the president of, I believe, of Yale University at that time. And, of course, he was writing about something that happened 100 years before that, at the time of the French Revolution. You need to get the book. It's called Fiat Money, Inflation in France. You need to get along with Bastiat's The Law. It was written in 1848, but as Santayana warned us, those who do not remember history are condemned to repeat it. So we have both of those books available by calling 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Fiat Money, Inflation in France, an inexpensive little book, but a powerful message which everybody who is concerned about what's happening today needs to read, because as you read what happened in France after the revolution in 1789, it's like deja vu all over again. Ron Brown, thanks so much for being with us. We'll look forward to talking to you a little later this month.
Always a pleasure.
Good night and God bless you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. Well, that was Ron, and we'd like to do programs with you. We hope that our listeners begin making preparation. Now, I want you to know Ron does support our program, but I think he's an honest man and he's doing a great job. And then the other thing is we need to remind all of our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and this is our endeavor. We've on about 60 outlets every week. That's radio and shortwave and internet and various internet. We're a whole flock of internet programs and the various satellites. But we are reaching out with the information you're not going to get elsewhere. So we do hope that many of you will give serious consideration to joining the Radio Liberty family of supporters, which is how we're able to do what we do. And again, the number to call would be 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Give serious consideration to getting my book, The Brotherhood of Darkness, because if there's one book that will explain to you what's happening, I really think that's it, because it goes into the spiritual aspect of what's happening. And, of course, the subtitle of the book is The True Story of the Murder on the Orient Express, or at least The Story of the Murder on the Orient Express. So that's Brotherhood of Darkness, and, of course, you can get it in video or audio tape or certainly in just the book form. And, of course, if you'd like a free copy of my latest newsletter, the May-June newsletter, it's just about Osama bin Laden. Who was Osama bin Laden? Have we been told the truth about Osama bin Laden? Why, after the president repeatedly told the CIA to kill or capture Osama bin Laden, did the CIA refuse to carry out the directives of the American president? What's wrong with his story? Why is it that with all of these sophisticated things that we have, we can't find Osama bin Laden? Why is it that we weren't able to capture Osama bin Laden, during the Afghan war? I mean, we went into Afghanistan to get the wicked Osama bin Laden and al-Zawahiri and Mullah Omar and all those bad al-Qaeda people. And, gee, how is it they all escaped? Are we being told the truth? Are there other forces in the world that we're totally unaware of? Well, we ask you to pray for America. If you'd like a free copy of my newsletter, 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Pray for America. Pray for revival. Pray for our leaders and ministers. But please, please pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. Go to our website, radioliberty.com. Until Monday, may the Lord be with you.